Welcome to Parents' Perspective. I will never play with Tanya again, 6-year-old Melanie fumed. But I thought she was your best friend, her mother replied. Not anymore. She can play with dumb old Donna. And Melanie stormed out of the room. From a parent's perspective, how can we help our children navigate the sometimes rocky terrain of their friendships? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Today we have two experts to help us navigate this often uncharted area. Kathy Cohen is a social worker in private practice. She runs a group therapy program called Stepping Stones, which helps children develop the skills they need to make friends. She's the parent of 2 boys, 4.5 and 7. Welcome, Kathy.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Dr. Ron Vandeleu is a psychologist who has been in private practice and involved with community mental health for 25 years. He works with children, especially adolescents, and their parents. He has 2 children, 17 and 20. We're glad to have you with us, Ron.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Ron, are some young children just inherently friendlier or more social than others?
Yes. Some children are, by virtue of their heredity, more friendly, more outgoing, more confident. The children, almost all other things being equal, regardless of other things going on, might be more pulled toward connecting with other kids. Some kids who are equally sensitive might be more pulled toward being more internal in their responses to other kids. So on the surface, it might look like a child is more friendly, and the child may feel more friendly, and the other kids perceive him or her as more friendly. But another child who may be more reserved by virtue of his or her blueprint or heredity may be more shy but have the same urge to be friendly and have the same urge to be experienced as friendly, but just doesn't have the antenna or doesn't have the inner feedback system that tells him how to do it.
I absolutely agree with you, and I think that there are kids that are internal and they don't have that desire to necessarily connect with other kids, but most kids really do. We as human beings have a natural desire to get connected and have relationships with other people, and some children are naturally able to do that, just like Ron is saying, and other children really have to be taught the skills that are going to make them able to be able to get connected with other kids.
But they can be taught those skills.
Absolutely. Just like math or English, these are social skills, and they're not taught in school. I wish they were, but we as parents are able to take that role with kids.
Kathy, during toddlerhood, when children are so focused on their own needs, how can we help them become more socially sensitive?
Well, I think that the little ones are very egocentric. I mean, we're sort of aware of that. But I think it's really helpful to get kids out and playing with other children. Now, especially, there's play groups, neighborhood groups of mothers and fathers that gets their kids together at very early ages. And I think that exposure to other kids helps the kids get connected, work on their impulsivity. They have to share body space with each other. They have to share toys with each other. They have to negotiate rules and expectations at a very early age. And that early exposure, it means everything.
Yeah, I might add to that that the social phenomena of smaller families has an impact on children's experience of themselves in relation to other children. 25 or 35 or 40 years ago and back, when parents had 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 children, and particularly in rural areas where you needed 5 or 6 or 7 children to do the chores, children grew up with other children in a way and with the kind of intimacy that children aren't automatically exposed to today. And those children had opportunities to experience each other sort of like in their pajamas, as well as at the dinner table, as well as doing chores, whereas kids in a family of 4, where there are 2 children and 2 parents, and usually there's a 3 to 4 or 5 year difference between the ages, those children don't have the automatic opportunities that kids some generations ago did. There are advantages to that in that there's more available for those children in some ways in the smaller families. And that's why Kathy is right on target when she's talking about exposing the children to other children in varying kinds of situations, including not only the structured times, but the unstructured times as well, the sort of pajama time rather than just the soccer time or the structured so that everybody's doing a task time, and there's a little bit more free give and take in the unstructured times.
Ron, in what ways is it to a child's advantage to develop appropriate social skills?
Well, in our society, verbal skills and social skills are what takes you where you're going. And when you don't have the social skills or you don't have the verbal skills, you're at quite a disadvantage. Again, our society is not a particularly protective society. We don't have extended families as we used to. And so there's much more of a need for a child to grow up with a sense of confidence in herself or himself. And that confidence derives from the ability to get along with other kids and other adults and to be perceived by others as being capable. That's what gets internalized by the time the child moves into adolescence, a sense of competence about self, a sense of affiliability about self, the ability to get along with others. And with those skills, the child can then go after what sort of his natural or her natural inclinations are, job-wise or whatever. But without those, the child's in a one-down position. Affiliation and attachment is an instinctual, inherent need that children have. And without the opportunity to develop it in a way that leaves the child feeling more confident in herself or himself, the child will doubt himself or herself.
Those are important terms, affiliation and attachment. You want to explain those a little bit?
Attachment is a process of taking in the experience of yourself as is experienced through somebody else. And when you can take that in, when the caretaker or the mother or the father smiles back at an infant or a toddler, that toddler takes in a kind of pleasure about himself or herself through the experience of the caretaker's smile. And there's a relationship through hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of those kinds of interactions where the caretaker is attuned to what the toddler needs or what the toddler wants. And when there's a good match, the child experiences a kind of comfortableness in relationship. And it's the comfortableness in relationship that becomes a confidence later on in other relationships.
And affiliation is different.
Affiliation applies to more than a one-to-one relationship. Affiliation is a kind of, we think of it in terms of friendships or connections with other people. Some of those connections may be intense, or they may be a much more modified kind of attachment where you might have an affiliation with a group of people as opposed to an attachment to each person in that group.
Kathy, what social skills are appropriate for different age ranges?
I think when you're looking at the younger folks, you really are looking at being able to play at the same, when I say younger folks, I mean age 4 or 5, you're really looking at children who can sort of play, not necessarily together, but next to each other, side by side, without intruding on each other's space. We call that parallel play. That's an expected developmental stage at that, at 3, 4 years of age. As children begin to grow, you expect that they'll be able to play with each other and negotiate rules and boundaries and share materials and talk to each other, communicate back and forth. There should be some form of reciprocity between children where there's a give and take in a conversation. And as children grow into adolescence, you expect more camaraderie, strong developmental ties with other kids their own age, groupings that kids generally in teenage years tend to group off, and that's okay. And they get connected through common interests and through being able to share common feelings and values with each other.
It seems to me, remembering when my kids were little, that the younger they are, the more their friendships sort of revolve around they like the same toy or they're wearing the same outfit or something like that. And then as they get older, it's more cognitive rather than more concrete.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that also children who are younger, they're not as attached, like Ron was talking about. They may have an affiliation and kids come in and out of their lives, and they don't have that strong bond that we call friendship. And as they get older, they get more connected cognitively, and they really want to be with that one person or two people, and they're attached to who that person is, separated from what they do.
We're going to take a short break now, and we'll be right back.
Parents' perspective.
I don't think it's a parent's job to be their child's friend. It's more of a teacher role.
Being a good parent is hard work.
People have PhDs in astrophysics, but they're helpless with an infant.
Parents' perspective's family-oriented topics give you the tools you need to help you raise your children.
Parents have every right to say we're not going to be a television home.
For practical, user-friendly advice on family issues, tune into Parents' Perspective. Hosted by veteran parents Linda Perlis and Sandy Burt.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. Today we're talking with Kathy Cohen and Dr. Ron Vandeloo about children's friendships.
Kathy, what is a parent's role in helping a child gain social skills?
I think a parent's role is extremely important in helping children gain social skills. It starts off pretty early with the socialization and getting them exposed, even to the point of setting up play dates for their child as they get a little older but aren't really quite able to negotiate the phone and calling kids themselves. Parents can get involved with calling other parents and arranging play dates and going over the rules of how to behave on a play date with your child. And actually, with some children, they can't have sort of a never-ending play date where they come over in the afternoon and sleep over. That may be too much time for them. It might really require a parent to be more involved in discussing with the child exactly what activities they want to play, what toys will be available, what toys are off limits if you think your child is going to have trouble sharing particular toys, for instance. And some children, it's even after an hour, it's too much. And you have to know your own child and be able to say, well, you know what? We'll have little Johnny over for 20 minutes today. And see how that works out. And then if it works out, next week we'll have him over for 30 minutes. And other children have no problem. You can send them down to the basement and they'll play for hours by themselves. And you know your own child and what they're capable of. And you can at least initially set the parameters for what is okay and how they should behave and always be loyal to the guest. Don't go off playing with another child if you have a guest over. Parents really are responsible for laying out those boundaries for their children.
Well, kids understand about rules. I think they feel more secure if they know
Absolutely.
What the rules are.
Absolutely. And it gives them a structure and something to live by, and they know how far they can go and how far they can't go. I also think that parents do a lot of modeling themselves, tremendous amount of modeling. And you watch your parents and you see how they behave and you see them speaking politely to other people and using their pleases and using their thank yous and getting into conversations. Some children are going to be more able to pick up on modeling than other children. Some children are going to look at their parents' modeling and it's going to go right over their head. They're not really going to be able to take it in and use it. So parents have to be actually more active and prompt the child in a social situation. You know, Johnny, here we are. We're moving into the playground now. What are you going to do? What are the steps you can take to join in? It might even take going over with your child who's at the playground. Let's look for the person with a smiley face, so that you don't have your child end up choosing an inappropriate playmate or someone that's not going to really be a good match for them. So let's look for the smiling face. And then what can you say to the child? So the parent acts as a prompter and the child answers the questions, and then it's almost role played out between the parent and the child ahead of the social situation. And then the child enters into the social situation and it's more fluid and it's easier for them. Not all children are going to require this. Some children, my younger son, you can let him loose in any social situation and he will make a friend within 2 minutes. And my older son is not like that. He requires more guidance. Sometimes I even have had to intervene with my older son and actually go up to a playmate and say, you know, my son Jesse's a little on the shy side. Maybe you could take him in under your wing and make him feel comfortable. And that kind of lead-in has helped him to join situations that have been difficult for him. Clearly, he's 7-year-old. I wouldn't do that if he were 12. He'd probably kill me. But if he were at 7 years old, he can tolerate it. He said that's okay with him. It helps him move into a situation that might be difficult for him.
Children, as you were mentioning before, Kathy, children have different capacities to respond at different developmental levels. some children who are 6 or 7 or 8 and are on the shy side, but nevertheless have the same sensitivities as a sibling who is not on the shy side, when that child moves through adolescence, given other things are relatively intact, you may notice that that child begins to blossom. And it's in response to perhaps that child has particular skills that are more successfully expressed in adolescence than they are in the 6 to 9-year-old level. And as that child experiences those successes, he or she may then feel more comfortable in advertising those successes or sharing those successes or just beaming about those successes, mm-hmm. which then helps that child become more friendly more automatically with other people because the expectation is, I'm doing pretty well, or there's just a growth in confidence at different developmental levels for different kids.
One of my children set very careful rules about who he would play with and when. He was insistent on watching Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers when he was little and the Electric Company, and no one could interfere. He would watch with other children, but he would not play with other children during those times. So kids would knock on the door and he would say, you know, I'm busy watching my shows, but if you want to come watch them with me, come on in. Most kids would say, we'll come back later.
Mm-hmm.
But he understood that it wouldn't work if he let them come in and play at that time because he was very much tuned in.
Right.
Ron, how should a parent react when our child is being bullied?
Well, it's first how the parent does react as opposed to how the parent should react, because as a parent, there's a kind of instinctual protectiveness that one experiences when your child is being bullied. It really almost doesn't matter how it started. And so a parent who, by virtue of the biology of parenthood, is going to be instinctually protective of his or her child. And to know what your reactions are at a gut level is the starting place. And then what you're going to do with those reactions so that you don't come across as false or phony or whatever to your child. Because if your child is being bullied, your child has just been in a situation in which there are some pretty raw feelings that are being triggered in the child and in the bully. And as a parent, you have some pretty raw feelings that are being triggered as well. And if you respond to the child in a kind of way that either just moves into the rawness of the child's feelings, like, well, I'm going to call up that guy's father, da-da-da-da, really isn't particularly helpful to the child because there's nothing sort of self-reflective about it. There's hardly anything soothing about it either. It may be siding with the child, which may be helpful, which may not be helpful. So for the parent to appreciate his own experience of the bully experience allows him to know how the child might be feeling and allows the child to know how the parent might be feeling. The parent understands what's happening to him. And then to apply some principles of what you want to teach your child, the principles of how to take care of yourself, how to be self-protective. It depends on the age of the child, depends on what the precipitants are to the bullying experience. But most parents want their children to work it out with whoever the experience just occurred, rather than to go back and beat up the kid or to just be passive and allow it to occur. So it depends on what the nature of the situation is.
What about if your child is the bully?
I think the same thing applies. If your child is the bully, there's been something that's been taking place in your child and in your family that didn't start when the bullying experience occurred. It's been ongoing. Children don't become bullies because they're having a bad day. Children become bullies because there's been a long-standing pattern of the child's feeling not good enough, feeling angry about something, feeling that life is pretty unfair, and that child, out of frustration or impulsivity, is getting even, is getting back at either a particular kid who's been giving him a hard time, or is getting back at life through picking on somebody who may not have a strength to take care of himself or protect himself or herself.
I think it's really difficult for parents to know how to react when a child comes home with either a bullying story or when a parent is called about their own child being a bully. It's very scary for parents, and it's hard not to be reactive, like Ron is saying. And when you're reactive, you're not thinking clearly, and it's hard to get all the information. I think if parents can react calmly and take in what the child's saying and really try to get the whole story, sometimes what parents might find is bullying is not bullying at all. It's really a teasing, a sort of general kind of bantering teasing that most kids do to each other. And I think you're going to help your child react very differently if your child's just being teased in a bantering way than if your child's being truly bullied. And sometimes if your child's really being bullied, the parent might have to get more involved by calling a teacher, getting more information, calling the person who's out on the playground, if that's where it's happening, in the lunchroom, and seeing what the story is. And if, in fact, your child's really being threatened, you might have to get more involved. But in my experience, I don't know what your experience is, Ron, but in my experience, 90% of teasing is teasing. It's not bullying. The 10% that is more threatening, physical teasing, is more rare, but it is more necessary for parents to become involved. And as far as if you have a child that is a bully, I think that that's really important that you hear that from other parents. If somebody is telling you, if a teacher is telling you, if another parent is telling you, your child's been bullying another child, it really is saying something about your child feeling unsuccessful, feeling bad about themselves, maybe having issues around power and control. And to really pay attention to that and get your own child the services that he or she might need to take care of that bullying problem.
Parents often fear sharing what might be going on with their children or with someone else's child. And one of the things that Sandy and I have talked about a lot on our shows is the most important thing you can do for yourself as a parent is to share with other parents
Absolutely.
What's going on. So you learn what your child's needs are and they learn what their child's needs are in the process. It can be done gently.
Yes. Yes, and it's hard not to respond defensively, but
sure.
I really encourage parents to talk to each other, like you're saying, and really listen to each other.
How do children learn their social skills, Ron?
There is an automatic unfolding of social skills that are triggered by social experiences, both within the family, within the school setting, within teams, within whatever the social setting is. As parents, we don't have to teach our children so much. We just have to pay attention to our children and teach them where they need the help. So I think to reduce some of the apprehension about making our children perfect or teaching them the social skills just right, relax a little bit and allow your child to be the child that he or she is and allow that developmentally your child will unfold in a way that's basically going to be pretty healthy.
Why do some children find it so difficult to make or keep friends?
I think it's important to make that distinction between being able to make a friend and being able to keep a friend. Some kids really make very good first impressions. They're on the surface very endearing. They know how to cooperate. They know how to wait their turn. They know how to ask the right questions and do the right thing to get people to connect to them. Some kids don't even have that ability. They really have trouble cooperating. They have trouble controlling their impulses. They might not be able to read social signals clearly. So they don't really know what another person's trying to tell them. And so then they can't respond appropriately. That child's going to have more trouble making a friend. With the keeping a friend, with the child who is able to make a good first impression, it is being able to sustain that relationship that becomes more difficult, being able to give another person what they need and over time share in different activities, control your impulses over a long period of time. And that's hard for some children to do.
We're so pleased to have been able to talk with Mrs. Kathy Cohen and Dr. Ron Vandeleu today about helping children learn to socialize. Thank you both for your insights. Our gift for caller number 2 on our listener poll is an autographed copy of our book, Parents as Mentors. To answer the following question, please call us at 1-800-791-8573. What has been your child's biggest stumbling block with friendships?
We look forward to sending you Parents as Mentors. Call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573. You can also reach Parents Perspective through your local station or by email to parentspr@aol.com. Or to learn more about us and our book, Parents as Mentors, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.